This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is Open Mic on WJR. Our show airs every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And each week, we aim to bring you stories and commentary from students who are involved in the Sportscaster program. I've been fortunate, really fortunate, to be a part of Sportscaster coming up on a year. And this is our seventh month on the airwaves here at WJR, which is really cool, I feel like. And on today's show, we're going to cover a wide range of topics, but we're going to hear from a man who's devoted much of his life, nearly 50 years, as the voice of the Hamilton Hawkeyes over on the west part of the state, public address announcer Lauren Juice Burns. His devotion to high school athletics is incredible, really, and he's an incredible guy. He'll have some life advice for us and take us on a trip down memory lane coming up a little bit later in the show. He sat down with Sportscaster.com's Ethan Pavey, who's from Groves High School. We're also going to look ahead to our high school football game of the week between Howell and Brighton. Sportscaster.com's Giovanni Mascheri, who hosts Drive to the Game every Friday night on WJR. He'll be in to preview that matchup. We're also going to get into what it means to be a backup quarterback. I know we all know what a backup is, but really, what is it that makes being a backup so valuable? You know, second stringers don't always get the same kind of love as the starters, but when it comes to the quarterback position specifically, it's a little different. So we're going to get into that. And our first guest on today's show knows what that's all about. He's going to be our starter to lead things off tonight. Gabe Loper from Wayne State University and member of the Sportscaster program joins us now. Gabe, how are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. I'm a little bit better that I don't have to do the full game prep every week to kind of hold the clipboard or get in the game, but I'm doing well.
So what is your connection? Like, what do you know about backup quarterback?
I mean, like I said, I was a backup myself. Now, it was one of those things where, especially in high school, but I didn't play, you know, obviously college, I wasn't a professional backup, but high school-wise, it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, you're the backup, but you can also play every other position on the field offensively, because you kind of have to know what every position does anyway. So kind of plug and play. Every week it was something different. If our QB one went down, then it may have been go time, show time exactly. It's one of those things where always ready, always on, but never on.
I got you. And what was, remind everybody where you went to high school?
Grosse Pointe North High School, baby.
All right. That's the whole, you don't have to get ready if you stay ready.
Exactly.
The tough part, I think, being a backup is like you have to balance the ambition of wanting to be the guy, but a selflessness of, okay, how do I help the guy be the guy and our team perform at its best? I really feel like it's an extremely unselfish position. Would you agree?
I agree. And, you know, you're talking about the idea of the guy, because here's the thing. You're preparing to be like the guy. You're preparing around the guy. And in the inevitable situation where the guy goes down, everybody in the stands, on the broadcast, everybody wants you to be the guy that just went down. So you really can't be just yourself. I mean, like, you know, the Josh Johnsons, the Josh McCowns, the Ryan Fitzpatricks, they're trying to replace a guy that just went down. So it's a little bit tough. You know, you obviously got to be selfless, but also at the same time, man, I mean, it's kind of like being put in a brutal spot a little bit too, because you can't really be yourself. You just have to be a shell of your starter.
Yeah, that's the part for me I always feel is, you know, when the backup comes in, you know, it's like as soon as the starter goes down, they, okay, you know, so-and-so, say Gabe Loper enters the ball game, you know, they're handing the ball off on the next play, right? Because it's like, and so it's like, you know, they water down the offense a little bit where it's like, okay, let's ease this guy in. You may be looking at your coach, you're like, hey, no, full bore, let's go. I'm ready to go. But like you said, you can't really be at your best right away.
Yeah, you kind of got to get eased into it a little bit. I mean, I know that he wasn't the backup to start the season, but take this past Thursday night game with Russell Wilson after Jackson Dart went down, and, you know, Russell Wilson, they run the ball, Giants run the ball first play, and then they throw, I mean, Russell just throws an absolute duck into the turf, and you got Dable, all these guys that are sprinting into the blue medical tent to check up on Dart to make sure he's okay to get Russell Wilson out of there. So it's one of those things where if you don't live up to the starter pretty much right away, first snap, then things can get ugly pretty fast for you.
Just from a historical standpoint, there have been at least 9 backup quarterbacks who have won a Super Bowl. Earl Morrill subbed for an injured Johnny Unitas during the game back in Super Bowl V. Some of our listeners may remember that one. Roger Staubach, Jim Plunkett, Doug Williams, Jeff Hostetler, Trent Dilfer. Tom Brady at once was a backup quarterback behind Drew Bledsoe. Nick Foles went on to win a Super Bowl MVP in 2017. It was like Super Bowl 52. So there has been a history of backups ascending into the lead headset and having an opportunity to go on and win it. It's a mentally grueling job. There's got to be the right emotional balance and then the physical capabilities of getting it done. You know, I don't want to say we dumb it down, but, you know, a lot of times you get a shot, Gabe, you look over at the sideline, it's like the guy holding the clipboard and it's like, what's he doing holding the clipboard? But, you know, he's like constantly studying. You know what I mean? It's like you're like taking an exam while the game's taking place.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I mean, he is the highest paid standstill guy on the roster in many, many cases, especially you kind of get those veteran guys that come back and, you know, they're playing, even like your Joe Flacco's, you know, like you said, they're playing for longevity. And you're absolutely right. Kind of what we were talking about before the break is the preparation that goes into it and how everything is planning for you to go into the game. And you nailed the nail on the head where, you know, you got guys that have been able to come in and have success. I mean, I got this 49ers flag behind me and Colin Kaepernick started as a backup. I mean, Brock Purdy was third on the depth chart behind both Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo, and both those guys went down. And then you had Alex Smith, who eventually left San Francisco, went to go start for Kansas City, and his backup was Patrick Mahomes. So, like you said, the mental toughness that goes into it, the mental preparation that goes into it, it's difficult stuff. But, you know, when your number's called, got to be ready.
Yeah, you're all over it. And I think the position, you know, again, just from a human level standpoint, like as competitors, we all want to start, like be the guy. You know, the second stringers don't get that same kind of love. But obviously, when you get to the NFL, you're a pro. As a professional, what can I do? Obviously, you want to have longevity and set up your financial future. But, you know, what can you do to elevate your team? Like, how can I be as ready as I need to be week after week after week, day after day after day after practice, knowing that you may never even get into a ballgame? I think of a guy here, Gabe, that I knew that I covered actually in college. It was Chase Daniel, fabulous quarterback at the University of Missouri. He went undrafted in 2009, but had this prolific career. He was a Heisman candidate in 2007, but he was kind of undersized, 6'2", 235. So undrafted in 2009, signed and then waived promptly thereafter by the Redskins, then signed to the Saints practice squad as like their emergency number three, waived there, then re-signed with the Saints, ultimately went to a Super Bowl backing up Drew Brees, so won a Super Bowl ring there. So Chase now works at ESPN as a game analyst and has a podcast that he does with Diana Rossini, but played 13 years in the NFL. And he was also in Kansas City when I was there covering him. So he goes Redskins, Saints, Chiefs, Eagles, back to the Saints, Bears, Lions. We remember him being here in 2020 as a backup. And then finished his career in 2022 with the Chargers. He threw 273 passes in 13 years in the league. 9 career touchdown passes from 2009 to 2022. But made more than $40 million as a backup quarterback in the NFL. And I don't bring that up to just say like, oh, it's not all about the monetary value attached to it. But it goes to show you a little bit about his character and the fact that all these other teams were willing to bring him in when you're backing up guys like a Brees or a Mahomes or whoever it is. You say, okay, here's a guy who's going to come in and be a professional about it. And he's not going to be barking in my ear that I should be starting, should be starting, should be starting. I'm going to say, give me the clipboard. Let me help the guys get ready. Let me go through the practice team reps with everybody. I just find it to be, of all the NFL positions, one of the more fascinating ones, just because we rarely hear from them. And when we do, it's like high scrutiny, right? Microscopes on. It's like, you better perform. And if you don't, it's like, who's this guy? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's like spot on. But you kind of talked about how much Chase Daniel's moved on. It's always funny because the best backup quarterbacks, they kind of move around the most. I mean, I feel like Josh Johnson, I mean, I forgot how long exactly he's been in the league, but I mean, he's been pretty much on every team in the NFL, including the LA Wildcats back in 2020, the XFL squad. So, I mean, this guy is moving around, moving around. I mean, that's a lot of systems, a lot of schemes to know, to remember. But the back quarterback is a position that GMs will invest in. You know, we need a guy where if he goes down, we have a guy that can come in, not exactly light it up, but can come in and finish the game, win the game. I mean, I think of like Tyler Huntley for the Baltimore Ravens. Obviously, Cooper Rush is the current backup, but Huntley got some playing time this past week. And Huntley's ability to mimic Lamar Jackson's game as close as possible without it being Lamar Jackson. So it's like, in some cases, you want to get those kind of replica guys, but in other cases, you need a guy like Joe Flacco, who's played on three of the four NFC North teams now, you know, currently playing for the Bengals after being traded from being the back quarterback slash starter, then to the Browns. And I'm like, I mean, look at how much money Josh McCown has made. Just being a backup quarterback, going from team to team to team, holding the clipboard, coming in when needed, making plays.
Yeah, you're all over it. And I was actually listening to the Bengals the other day, and it was like, you know, so he, obviously Flacco goes from Cleveland to Cincinnati, and because Joe Burrow's down with injury, and even the radio commentator is like, well, you know, they got all they could have asked from Flacco. Well, he came in on a short week notice. I mean, imagine that. I think he like took like a commercial flight, you know, Cleveland to Cincy. And then it's like, okay, here's the playbook. Be ready to go in 3 days or 4 days, you know, get out there and run the offense. Obviously, Cincinnati came up short over the weekend. But there was an article that I think you might have read this too, with Jimmy Garoppolo when he first had gotten to New England. I think there might be a stigma about, you know, athletes in general, like, oh, they just know ball or they just know this. I mean, but to be a quarterback or backup quarterback, how much studying the calls? Have you ever listened to an actual play call?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
It's crazy. Like, our calls were very much like, okay, ready? 18 bucks sweep, break. Like, that was it. You know, it was like, okay. So it's like, you know,
that's water
hit
down.
The eight hole. We're sweeping to the, that's what I'm saying. And nowadays it's like, you're like reading some, you know.
Sounds like witchcraft almost. It's like.
Yeah. To me, it's like listening to some of those play calls. Like I know John Gruden, when he was having his quarterback camp, is like, you know, spider ZY banana and all this. Or when he does his quarterback camp room and he'll say, okay, diagram a play for me and then tell me what each receiver is doing on this play, what your pass protection looks like, what happens if the safety cheats or if the linebacker fades. You know, it's like these guys see it. And that's why guys like Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, some of those guys, or these career backup guys, they understand seeing a coverage and then boom, as soon as it shifts or a team shows blitz, okay, then your brain automatically goes to the next. It's very cerebral.
Oh,
very
yeah. Cerebral. I mean, a lot of times these guys are, I mean, they're getting two or three calls into the headset because you got the initial play call and then you got your check.
Yeah.
Safeties are playing instead of 15 yards of ball, they're playing eight. Okay, so they're in run commit. And they're still too high, so maybe we can get someone underneath. Maybe we'll still run the ball. All right, can, kill. Our playbook was, in high school, it was a little bit more sophisticated because we had all of our formation sets, and then we had our lasers, our razors, our motions, our Lord and Rome, which one we were, you know, where were you checking the receivers to? Ours was, I wouldn't say sophisticated, but it definitely wasn't just the good old-fashioned 18 bucks sweep that you see off of Madden either. So it was a lot to remember, but like I said, my offensive coordinator, he used me well because I was QB2, QB3, but at the same time, he's like, no, you got too much speed, man. Get out there at receiver.
That seems pretty sophisticated for me, man. Wait, what's laser and razor? What's that?
So laser was our Z receiver. If he was in the slot right, laser was motion to the left. And then razor was if he was slot left of our Rome set, tight end right, slot receiver left. Razor would be him moving to the right. Laser would be him moving to the left. So it would be like King right, Rome, Razor, 324, sprint pass, right, go.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Everything meant something. Plus, I mean, the offensive line, they had their checks and they're calling out. I'd get out there, identify the mic, always check the safeties first. How far off are the corners playing? Usually watch a little bit of film. Every team has at least one garbage corner. So you just got to identify that guy. And then, you know, usually we had a backside post. We didn't identify it, but it wasn't in the play call, but always had a backside post. Sometimes it's there. You never know.
You never know. I just remember when I was in high school, so I played running back, but I was pretty undersized. And so they moved me out to receiver as well. I remember always looking over at my quarterback, Mike Bushman, you know, in each huddle, and it's probably what every receiver says in middle school and high school. It's like, hey, man, I'm open. Like, I'm open. And then the other receiver on the other end's like, hey, I'm open too. And it's like, as the quarterback, you're like, guys, just here's the play call. If you're open, I'll find you. But quit suggesting that you throw it to, you know, that I throw it to you on every pass. And then invariably, he would throw it to me, you know, and I'd bounce off my face mask or whatever, and that was on to the next. But I just know, like, as a quarterback, you're getting all the signals. You're trying to read a defense, whatever. Now you got your receiver over in your ear like, hey, man, give me the ball. I'm open, man.
That's why I like flag football, because the number one play is just get open. Yeah. that's my go-to play. Yeah,
that's good.
No formation set, just get open.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, Gabe, always appreciate having you on. For the record, for the Lions, backup quarterbacks Hendon Hooker, Kyle Allen. Hopefully, I say hopefully, not, there's no disrespect to them, but hopefully moving forward, we won't see them in high volume if Jared Goff is able to continue to do what he does. But good having you on the show. Have a great rest of your week, and look forward to the next time we can connect.
Very soon. We'll see you. Thanks, Johnny.
All right, very good. All right, that was Gabe Loper from Wayne State University, a one-time backup, but always does such a heck of a job for us, sportscaster.com. Wherever you're listening to us tonight, I don't know if you grew up in a small town, medium-sized town, big town. I grew up in a real small town, rural community in Northwest Ohio. It's about 100 miles from Detroit. It's called Delta, Ohio. It's like a town of 2,500 people, ice cream shop, pizza shop, a couple of stoplights, two gas stations. So it wasn't the smallest town that's ever existed, but certainly it was small town America, as they say. And there is something to be said about growing up in a small town. At our high school, we were the Delta Panthers. So it was all about Panther pride, green and white. And I say all that because one of our next guests on the program here, he has dedicated much of his adult life to athletics in Hamilton County, which is over on the west part of the state, just south of Grand Rapids there. We all probably know teachers or administrators or longtime coaches that have really dedicated their existence to bettering life in that school district. And Lauren Justenberg is that guy for Hamilton Athletics. And he sat down with one of our sportscasters, Ethan Pavey. Ethan goes to Groves High School, but really cool. So Lauren spent almost 50 years as a public address announcer there for the Hamilton Hawkeyes, calling high school football, calling high school basketball, been involved with the school board, the boosters program, just everything that's right about being in a smaller community and the athletics program. So I think you'll enjoy this one. We'll sit back and listen, a little trip down memory lane and some life advice coming your way from Lauren Justenberg from Hamilton High School.
Today, I have the privilege of sitting down with someone whose name is practically synonymous with Hamilton Athletics and Community Service, Lauren Justenberg. For more than four decades, Lauren has worn just about every hat you can imagine. Teacher, coach, announcer, and lifetime school board member. From calling games in a swaying green press box back in the early 1980s to helping guide Hamilton schools into the future, Lauren has dedicated his life to serving students, athletes, and families. He's also a lifelong Hawkeye and a proud University of Michigan fan who has shown what it means to give back to your community in every season of life. Lauren, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we get started, do you want to just share the love that you have for sports and like a little bit why you like giving back to the community?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. I think, first of all, it's enjoyable. High school athletics is great entertainment and a lot of fun. And so I like being involved in that. Also, this is a community that is very caring about people. They've done a lot for me and for other individuals. And so it's a way of giving back and being able to enjoy what I do at the same time.
Back in the 80s, you described the original press box at Hamilton as a little green building on stilts that swayed with the heavy winds. Is there any like one specific memory that you have with that press box and how the facilities have changed over time?
Oh, it's hard to come up with any one thing. It's just that what you said is exactly true. And then those who were filming games would have to go on top on the roof, which was a danger in itself, taking life and limb at putting them in danger. So it's just the way things were done back then, I guess. And so you really didn't know any better. And so you work with what you have.
Great. How are the facilities looking now?
Much better. Over the years, we've improved things significantly. We removed our older bleachers, put in all new bleachers, put in new concessions, restroom facilities, have a great press box. About 7 years ago, we put in artificial turf. And so now we have as good a facility as anybody in our area.
Like I mentioned earlier, you've held a lot of roles through the community out there in Hamilton, such as like a teacher, a coach, an announcer, and a school board member. What is something that you've learned throughout that process and you love to instill on the students and players that you meet?
Give something back when you can. Kids are important. Extracurriculars in school are important. You know, in the United States, schools are significantly different from other parts of the country in that we have major extracurricular activities. You know, students enjoy them, but they don't really know sometimes what they have. we've had students from other countries come and visit and do exchanges, and they just love the school atmosphere and being involved in extracurriculars. But we have to look at extracurriculars as part of the educational process. And if we don't look at them for their educational value, then we're wasting the taxpayers' money, as far as I'm concerned. So they're an important part. What can we learn from them? What good can come out from kids? And I think that's the fun part of it. You see kids enjoying the things that they're involved in.
The more important question, which one of those was your favorite?
I think probably community member is important because it's a way to give back to the community in exchange for what I've received from the community.
You've maintained loyalty to Hamilton and the University of Michigan as you've been a season ticket holder for around 50 years, right?
This year's 51.
Nice. Do those dual affiliations inform how you approach your work and the values you aim to bring to Hamilton?
Well, probably so. I guess you don't look at doing things to bring something to yourself. You look to bring success to the students, to the athletes, try to let them have good experiences. You know, athletes and students having positive experiences from what they do is what you want to do. That's your ultimate goal.
Throughout your time at Hamilton, I bet you've had so many cool experiences with players coming through your program or just like crazy games. Would you like to share one of those experiences with us?
Oh my, there's just so many things. I think a highlight would be in 1984 when we knew we had a basketball team, a boys basketball team that was going to be something special. And that was back when we had class A, B, C, and D. And we went into the year, we were a class C school, and we knew that we were going to have something special. That year, Kalamazoo Christian was the defending champion and had a 40-plus game winning streak going into the tournament. Detroit DePorus had four college players on their team and three that ultimately played in the National Basketball Association. And in the three final games of the state tournament, we beat the number one, the two, the number four teams in the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. And for a small town at Chrysler Arena, it was just an unbelievable experience for a small town to buy into. In Michigan, basketball tournament has always been the premier oldest sport. And so to win a state title, our first state title as a school in 1984 would certainly be a highlight. But there are football games, baseball games that I could tell you about and give examples of that would just go on. We had a kid back in the early 2000s who was just a great game changer, a kid by the name of Dustin Smith. And with his defense as a defensive back or his returning kicks, he could change a game faster than any athlete we ever had. Baseball, we've been to the state finals in baseball twice and had some great games, you know, looking back over the years. For a school our size, we've been very fortunate to have exciting games, games that people just love to talk about over the years.
Like we talked about earlier, one of your biggest motivations is helping these student athletes notice that they're part of something bigger than themselves. Is there a particular moment from your history at Hamilton that you can recall that really showed this principle that you instill in these student athletes?
I think a unique thing is how many of our students ultimately come back and live and work here because they want to be a part of something that they had good success with and enjoyable moments with, and they want their family, their young family members to have the same experiences. So I think the fact that our students have been willing to return and be a part of what they once were a part of.
All right, what a guy, you know, and what a story and what dedication to the Hamilton athletics programs out there in Hamilton County. But really good stuff from Ethan Pavey, and I think it's important to shine a light on people like Lauren Jusenberg and others. There's so many others across the state, you know, who you immerse yourself in the community, you pay it forward, you try to educate as best you can, you try to do the right thing, and that, to me, that's what it's all about. So even in the larger communities as well, but it's sometimes just fun to see those individuals that really make it their life's work to go about and better the community. So our thanks to Lauren Jusenberg from Hamilton High and also to Ethan Pavey there from Groves High School. Want to remind everybody to stop by Jack's Car Wash and treat your vehicle to the care it deserves. With over 50 locations across Michigan, You're never far from a clean car. And right now you can score a free wash. Just visit wlink.live/sportscaster. That's WLINK.live/sportscaster to redeem and experience the Jack difference for yourself. It is week 8 of high school football, and our drive to the game promo pits Howell against Brighton. Our drive to the game host is Giovanni Mascheri, proud graduate of Oakland University. And he tells us everything we need to know heading into Friday night's matchup.
My name is Giovanni Mascheri, your host of Drive to the Game. And as we get towards the tail end of the high school football season, we get to the games where it's all on the line. Towards the end of the regular season here, many are wrapping up their conference play. And many of these games late in the season come down to a winner takes the conference championship. The stakes are very high, and just about as high as they can get for the regular season. And we got a great one for you guys coming up this Friday night from Brighton High School as they will host Howell in a game that could directly decide the conference championship in the Kensington Lake Activities Association West, the KLAA West, one of the most competitive conferences that we have here in Michigan. Pre-game show starts at 6:50 exclusively here on sportscaster.com as well as our YouTube channel before we kick things off at 7 p.m. kickoff to Chris Renwick and our student broadcasters on WJR as well as our previously mentioned platforms. The Bulldogs and the Highlanders will be doing battle for top of the conference. I'll try to simplify the implications of the conference championship for this because there's many different ways they can go because it's not just Brighton and Howell that are fighting for it, but Northville is right there in terms of being crowned. Howell and Northville sit at 5-1 at a tied second and third in the conference. Meanwhile, Brighton sits at the top, a perfect conference record of 6-0 and an overall record of 6-1. Their only loss coming in week one to Dexter, who was regarded as one of the top 15 teams in the state, depending on where you look. Out of conference, so no huge deal in terms of the conference standings. Their only loss being to a very good team, so Brighton is no joke. As far as the scenarios go, if Brighton wins this game, they go to 7-0 in conference, and that locks up the conference championship outright. They will be crowned champions. But if they do not, if Howell defeats them, both teams will be sitting at 6-1. And then if Northville is able to chip in their last game of the conference season, they will also be 6-1. And then you get into all kind of very wordy tiebreakers about how to decide the winner, whether it's co-champions or an outright championship out of three teams with a 6-1 conference record. I'll spare you guys the wordy explanation for it. But the way the game is set here, if Brighton wins it, they get it on their own. And if they don't, there's a lot else that could happen to either force them a co-championship or none at all. So huge stakes in this game. And to set the stage even further for this game, this is the first time these two teams have seen each other since the playoffs. It's no different than many of the other games that we've covered on Drive to the Game, where it's a playoff revenge game in the regular season, but this one has a little bit of extra kick to it. It was not in the opening round, and it was not in the district semifinals either. This last meeting was in the district championship, and it was a close one. To paint the picture for you guys, it was kind of a flip of the table as far as the two teams coming into it. In last year, it was Howell that came into that game and won the conference championship with a 7-0 record. They made their way over to the district championship. Meanwhile, it was Brighton, who was 7-2 overall, 5-2 in conference, and they've matched up against the Highlanders. The final score of that game is a gut-wrenching 35-33. Howell gets the victory before losing in the regional final to Hudsonville. So that's where we leave off and come into this game here. Another one to decide the fate. It's going to be a ton of fun, a ton on the line, and a lot of talent between these two teams. And we'll get into them next. So the Brighton Bulldogs are on a crazy streak when it comes to this season, and they do it behind a very young offensive core. Many of their skilled players are sophomores or even juniors, of course, backed up by senior leadership and other positions. But specifically, I want to highlight the sophomore quarterback Dom Augusto, as well as sophomore running back Dom Nass. Now, as far as the running back is concerned, he is one of the fastest running backs to reach 1,000 yards in a season in Livingston County history. By week 6, he already passed the 1,000-yard mark, and he's had highlight plays all throughout the season, some of the most recent of which came in their win against Salem, where he had 19 carries for 149 yards and 2 touchdowns. One of those touchdowns came on a 62-yard run. And in addition to that, another sophomore core piece to the offense is sophomore wide receiver Jamo Parcell, who in that same game had 4 catches for 70 yards and is usually good for around 4 catches and around that some yards. And taking a look at their most recent schedule, kind of to prove the offense's lethality, in their past 2 games against Plymouth, 52 points scored in a 52-3 win over Plymouth. 35-14 against Plymouth Salem in just their past 2 games. We'll get to the same topic when it comes to Howell, but this is a very dangerous, very young offensive core with strong defensive abilities as well. They've held teams ever since their loss to Dexter, where they gave up 50 points. They have not given up more than 14 the rest of the way. 2 shutouts, 1 game holding to 7, 1 game holding to 3, and 2 games holding to 14. They do not give up a ton of points, and especially potent against Northville, who is competing for a slice of the co-championship pie, where they held them to 14 points and a 21-14 victory in what now proves to be a huge game in terms of the standings. We saw Northville in week 1 in their win against Lake Orion. 14-13 wasn't as strong as they would prove to be later on in the season, but to have a win against them in September 26, about week 5, that proved to be huge. So this is a very dangerous team. Now let's look to the Howell Highlanders. So for Howell, you want to talk about a team who has been on fire lately, then this is definitely going to be one of them. Currently, they're tied for 25th in the Detroit News State Super 25. Meanwhile, Brighton, the Bulldogs, are just a little bit higher at the 21st spot in the state. But you want to talk about one of the hottest teams so far. In their past few games, since that week 3 loss to Northville, they have outscored their opponents 177-21. That is in a combination of 4 games. 177 points in 4 games, over 40 points per game, and only given up 21 in total. Insane numbers. Brighton has held up a similar score sheet when it comes to their season. They average 34.7 points per game and allow only 6.3 points per game. But then you look to Howell, 36.5 points per game, a little bit higher, and allowing only 9.7 points per game. Also a little bit higher than the defense of Brighton. But these really are two teams where the numbers are just astounding. And Howell does most of their damage the old school way. The run and ground and pound kind of old school way. They don't pass the ball very often at all. And if their last week's win over Novi is any example, they threw the ball twice. Otherwise, 43 carries for 275 yards on the ground. And a lot of that work being done by their junior running back, Bryce Kish, who rushed for 11 carries and 81 yards and 3 touchdowns in that big win over Novi. It's the way they do business, and it's their identity this season. So it's going to present a very tough challenge for Brighton if Brighton wants to get that conference championship, or if Howell, as the defending champions, wants a piece of the pie themselves. It's going to be a great and interesting match. Will the firepower of either team win over the other, or will it be a very tough fought out game that goes down to the wire. It's going to be hard to tell, and the only way you can tell is by tuning in to Drive to the Game this Friday night. 6:50 is the pregame show before we kick things off at 7 p.m. to WJR with Chris Renwick and our broadcasters. I hope you guys can join us. It's going to be a great, great game with championships on the line. And also a little brown jug on the line as well, as this is also a trophy game for these two teams that goes back in their rivalry history. So this is Giovanni Moscheri from Drive to the Game, and we will see you there.
Okay, look forward to having everybody tuning in on Friday night. Remember, Drive to the Game just before kickoff here on WJR. I want to thank Giovanni Moscheri for setting the table for everything we need to know about Howell and Brighton. Also want to thank Ethan Pavey from Groves High School and his interview with Lauren Justenberg, longtime PA announcer at Hamilton High School. And also want to thank our good friend, Gabe Loper from Wayne State University, who hopped on. We talked about the importance of the backup quarterback in the great game of football. We look forward to having you tuning in every Wednesday night. Again, this is the show Open Mic. We come on every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. We will see you next time. I'm your host, Johnny Kane. Until then, Godspeed.